Hi there, and welcome to another one of my podcasts. This one's a lockdown podcast because I only go out once a week, Sunday mornings, for my week's shopping. That's the state we're in. Luckily, I have lots of 78s here, so I don't have to worry about going out to find them. One of the people who's today's superstar, all the women love him, is of course George Clooney. He comes from a famous family, and the most famous of them all was the late Rosemary Clooney, probably best remembered for her role in the Bing Crosby film White Christmas. She was born in Kentucky. Parents were mixed, sort of Irish and German, and she was raised Catholic, but the parents separated. Her brother went with her mother to California, and she stayed with her sister Betty, and the two of them became entertainers. She was born in 1928. And at the age of just 18, she made her first records with the Tony Pastor Big Band. But it was in the early 50s that she made her name. This was a strange time. Jazz was sort of going out and rock and roll hadn't quite come in. And what was selling were what I would call novelty records. She didn't really like them very much, but she had big successes with songs such as Come Along to My House. She also recorded Mambo Italiano, This Old House, and that sort of thing. Bocciami is another one of hers. And that's what I suppose she was known for, but she could have, and did indeed, sing better stuff. For instance, one or two Irving Berlin songs in the film White Christmas. Well, I'm going to give you another one of her novelty songs recorded in the early 50s. It's a strange song, this one. It seems to be a little happy novelty song, but there's something vaguely sinister about it. I don't know quite why I'm saying that, but I've always felt it. Nevertheless, the lyric itself is perfectly harmless, and the accompaniment is sort of strange as well. It's just an electric organ and one or two other instruments. Nevertheless, she did well with this song. So, Rosemary Clooney singing Little Red Monkey from the early 50s.
Look at the monkey, funny monkey, little red monkey, acting so fidgety. Look at the monkey, funny monkey, little red monkey, cute as can be. Where is her mama, papa, sister, brother, cousin, rest of the family? Little red monkey on her own, some very lonesome monkey is she. Ah, ah, ah,
ah.
If you get her into a zoo, she'll do all of her tricks for you. Won't you drop her a line or two, inviting her to the zoo? For if you do, she'll be a happy, snappy monkey, little red monkey, acting so merrily. I hope you like this little red monkey, for that little monkey is me. Tricks for you. Won't you drop her a line or two, inviting her to the zoo? For if you do, she'll be a happy, snappy monkey, little red monkey, acting so merrily. I hope you like this little red monkey, for that little monkey is me. Little red monkey, little red monkey, nobody else but me.
Rosemary Clooney, who died in 2002 at the age of 74. She didn't have a completely happy life. There was a period when she was heavily involved in drugs, and I think she drank an awful lot too. Nevertheless, she left us a fine legacy of recordings. Unlike the following recording, which is sort of chilling, some of you may remember the scene in Cabaret where these good-looking young blonde youths stand up and start singing a song which I think is called "The Future Belongs to Us." And only as the camera pulls back do you see the Nazi insignias on their sleeves, because this is Nazi Germany in the early 30s. Well, 10 years earlier in the USA, an organization in its way just as terrible called the Ku Klux Klan, those words apparently representing the sound of a rifle being cocked for fire, went through a huge revival, many people say inspired by the film Birth of a Nation. And they had their songs. If you don't speak English and you just hear this track, it seems like a fairly jolly little song. Nothing wonderful about the music, but nothing terrible either. And then you start listening to the words, and the song is called "Why I Am a Klansman and Wear a Klansman's Mask." Of course, it doesn't mention anything about stringing up black people or setting churches on fire or any of the really horrible, evil things that they got up to. This is all about loving God and country and loving liberty. A load of old rubbish. But as I say, I find it fairly chilling to listen to, in the same way that that scene from Cabaret was chilling. It must have been recorded, I would guess, in the late 20s, and this tells you the sort of twisted minds that people in the KKK have always had, and they're still around. Some of them really like President Trump, which again is worrying. Anyway, here it is, a KKK record, "Why I Am a Klansman."
The stars had ceased to twinkle, and the moon had hid its face. The world was closed in darkness as Klansmen took their place. 'Twas then I vowed to heaven that a Klansman I would be, to fight for right, old glory, and the land of liberty. That's why I'm a Klansman, and wear a Klansman's mask, and raise my hand toward heaven, and shoulder a Klansman's hat. I vow that I'd be faithful wherever I may roam, to love my God and and honor our Klansman's home. That's why I'm a Klansman, and wear a Klansman's mask, and raise my hands on heaven, and shoulder our Klansman's hat. I vow that I'd be faithful wherever I may roam, to love my God and country, and honor our Klansman's home. I know 'twill come true in that world not made by man, where they all do the cuck-cuck-coo and sing my Ku Klux Klan. That they will understand and see the same as we. It takes a man American who loves his liberty. That's why I'm a Klansman, and wear a Klansman's mask, and raise my hand toward heaven, and shoulder a Klansman's hat. I vow that I'd be faithful wherever I may roam, to love my God and country, and honor a Klansman's home. That's why I'm a Klansman, and wear a Klansman's mask, and raise my hands on heaven, and shoulder a Klansman's hat. I vow that I'd be faithful wherever I may roam, to love my God and country, and honor a Klansman's home.
Mattia Battistini, one of the most legendary of Italian baritones, was born in 1856. That's 17 years before Caruso was born, and he outlived Caruso because he died at the end of 1928. He had various nicknames. The King of Baritones was one. La Gloria d'Italia, the glory of Italy, was another. He's supposed to be one of the greats, and yet when I listen to the majority of his records, I'm not convinced. He had no bottom to the voice. He's really sort of almost a pushed-down tenor, and his top notes in many of his records are pushed too hard, and then he gives an extra push at the end, which makes him sing sharp. However, I'm being a little unfair because he made his very first records at the age of 46, so the vast majority of his records were made when he was obviously past his prime. We'll never know how wonderful he might have sounded in the 1890s, but we do at least have a few records made in 1902. Of all places, these were recorded in Warsaw. I don't know what he was doing there, obviously singing, I suppose. And this was a time when the gramophone company were trying to gain status by recording the most famous of the singers. In these very early recordings, you can hear the sort of limpid lyricism of his voice, and I suspect that that's more like what he sounded in the 19th century. He sang all the major Donizetti, Bellini, Verdi roles, and quite a few unusual operas too, written by French and other composers. He had a huge repertoire, and he must have been sensational in his day. This, as I say, is an early recording of him singing from Don Giovanni, and here you can at least hear what he must have been at one point. It wasn't a huge, dark voice like my favourites, Tita Ruffo and Riccardo Stracciari. It wasn't that sort of rich, dark, almost bass-like baritone voice. It was almost, as I say, a tenor's voice in slightly lower key. But here is Mattia Battistini at the end of the height of his powers, I suppose, in 1902, at the age of 46, singing the serenade from Don Giovanni, De vieni alla finestra. I wanted to include something Brazilian this time. You'll see why later in the podcast. Jacob Bittencourt, that was his name when he was born, became known as Jacob do Bandolim. Bandolim is the Portuguese word for a mandolin. And although we think of Brazil as having music played on percussion instruments and none on string guitars, other instruments such as the flute and certainly the mandolin were also very, very important, particularly in the world of choro as opposed to samba. Jacob do Bandolim was born in 1918. He was half Jewish, and he obviously loved music from an early age, but like many musicians, found it difficult to make a living, so he often had a day job, a chemist, an insurance salesman, selling things in the street, and finally even a notary public. I'm not even certain if he ever did become a full-time musician, but he did become very famous. Even great singers like Elisete Cardoso would have him on their recordings as accompanist because he was almost identified with his instrument. He was the person you went to if you wanted somebody to play the mandolin. Sadly, he died at the age of only 51 from a heart attack. However, luckily, there are many recordings of his. He wrote over 100 tunes, mostly shodas, some of them lyrical songs like Noches Cariocas, and then Dosi de Coco, Coconut Juice, and this jazzy number here called Assanhado. He was also very keen on bringing back some traditional types of Brazilian music, such as shodas themselves, rather than just going with the current flow of music in his own time. Like many musicians, he had his favourite instruments. He'd had two in particular, which he always played, and now they are in a museum because, as I say, he's a sort of a legend. Well, this, as I say, is his own definitive recording of Assanhado, and I know that you'll enjoy it because it's wonderful music. Earlier in this podcast, I spoke about Mattia Battistini, one of the big names in the history of recordings of Italian baritones. Cesare Formichi was another great baritone, but he was born much later, 10 years after Caruso in 1883, that's 7 years before Gigli, which puts him roughly in the generation of Giovanni Martinelli. He survived till 1949. He studied in Rome, where he was born and indeed died, and made his debut in 1907 in Bologna, in Manon. But it wasn't long before he was a regular at La Scala in Milano. He was a really top-class baritone. He was soon invited to sing abroad, St. Petersburg in 1912, Argentina in 14, Paris, London in 1924, where he ended up being a sort of entrepreneur and putting on seasons of opera after he ceased to sing so often. He sang in Chicago for 10 years. He sang in Berlin. He had a proper international career. His name is forgotten now, except by a few collectors. And again, he may be a victim of what I call label snobbery, because he only ever recorded on the Columbia label. And if you're not on Phonotypia or Red Label HMV or Gramophone Company or G&T, then somehow people assume you weren't as good as the other singers, which is nonsense, because he was. Maybe not quite in the class of Tito Ruffo or Riccardo Stracciari, he was nevertheless, as they say in Wikipedia, which I've just come to, he had an important sounding voice, and that's precisely right. You just hear him and know immediately that he's an important singer. He lived to make electric recordings, but I'm going to give you, since it's Easter time, a recording of a famous religious piece called Agnus Dei, and I think you'll hear what a great singer he was. Incidentally, his son became a bass who appeared in several Italian films in the 40s and 50s, and I was actually in touch with his grandson. I've lost touch with him now, but he was, at the time, an executive in an Italian oil company, and I was able to send him some of his grandfather's recordings. Anyway, never mind all of that. Let's listen to the man. Cesare Formichi, 1883 to 1949. This is recorded in the early 20s, and he's a wonderful singer. And now we move just two or three or four years later and a continent away in the USA and a completely different sound world. Jazz was of course invented by black Americans, but by the late 20s a lot of white musicians had fallen in love with the music, and there were even one or two geniuses such as Bix Beiderbecke. There were also a lot of really good musicians, One of these was Miff Mole. He was born in 1898 and he survived till, I believe, 1961. In the late 20s, he got together with a whole bundle of other fine musicians. Roger Wolf Kahn, who ended up running his own dance band. Red Nichols, particularly, and Miff Mole together played in various groups with various names, and sometimes Miff Mole was the leader and sometimes Red Nichols. But there were also people like Jimmy Dorsey, Vic Burton, the creative percussionist, Arthur Schutt, the pianist, various others like that. And they made lots and lots of records. One of them, the one I'm going to play to you today, shows off the fact that Miff Mole was probably one of the earliest trombone soloists in jazz who had an effect on other people. Until Jack Teagarden came along, he was maybe the top man. This is a song written by Rodgers and Hart called You Took Advantage of Me. I've heard modern versions of this song and I hadn't realized how old it was. It was written in the 20s. This is a wonderful band. The difference between white and black jazz at that time was that a lot of the white records had complicated arrangements because these musicians could read the dots as well, and they didn't just rely on solos, although they could solo too. What makes this particular track attractive is that it swings, and it swings in a way that suggests a band playing at least 10 years later. Anyway, enough said. This is Miff Mole and his group playing You Took Advantage of Me in the late 20s. And now we come to my track, and this time it's going to be a little bit different. And before I introduce it, I'm just going to have a little talk about what we're all going through at the moment. I'm recording this in the middle of April, and we've been in lockdown due to the coronavirus something like 4 weeks now. It didn't make a great deal of difference for me because since I have no family and I spend a lot of time alone, it just meant that I could spend even more time alone and do one or two things that I normally don't have time to do. The negative side of things is that there are absolutely no gigs, so that meant that there's no money coming in at all. The only advantage is, of course, that I haven't got any deadlines to meet, no places where I need to be seen, so I don't need to shave every day, etc., etc. I decided the safest thing for me to do was to go out once a week to go shopping, which is a shop about, 70 yards from my front door, so that the whole week's shop could be done in about 10-15 minutes, depending upon whether I had to queue or not. And everything was hunky-dory until about 10 days ago when I got ill, but not ill anything to do with the virus. I have an occasional trapped nerve in the back problem. This time it's come back really badly, so badly that one day, a few days ago, the only way I could get down from my bedroom to the kitchen, etc., was literally to go on all fours. I couldn't stand up. Luckily, sitting down or lying, even better, completely painless, but as soon as I stand up and put weight on the place where the nerve is, the pain is excruciating. I've got a nice painkiller called Solpadeine, which helps a bit. And today, about a week into this, I think the pain is beginning to subside, so hopefully it'll all be over soon. Well, that's my position at the moment. Luckily, I've got enough food to last me a few more days, so that even if the pain carries on for a couple more days, I'll be all right. It's no good asking somebody to deliver food here either, because I'd have to get down to the front door, which is just as painful as going for a walk. However, as I say, I think it's gradually going away now. I do hope so, because I don't like it. Now, the track itself that I'm going to give you is also very much connected with this whole viral thing, although when I wrote this silly lyric, I had no idea how prescient I was being. About 6 months ago, I was taking part in a sort of show given by a friend of mine called Celeste, who's a very young Sicilian singer, but who nevertheless specialises in MPB, Brazilian popular music, and she's literally probably one of the best in the world at it, and I don't say that lightly. So I was delighted to be part of the show. Having done my part, I was sitting down, and there was a paper napkin, and I don't know why this song came into my head, but there's a famous song, first I think sung by Sinatra and certainly by the Andrews sisters, and it's called The Coffee Song. One of the verses goes, "A politician's daughter was accused of drinking water and was fined a great big $50 bill. There's an awful lot of coffee in Brazil." And I was just thinking idly that you've only got to change the word coffee to coughing and you've got an entirely different lyric. And literally that evening on a paper napkin, I've still got it somewhere, I wrote a new lyric for it. Well, lo and behold, we're in the middle of this virus pandemic. It's not funny at all, really. But sometimes you just have to add a bit of humour to make things tolerable. Well, I have no proper professional recording equipment here, but somehow, using my two computers, one a really old one, I wrote an arrangement for this song and sang my lyric over the top of it. And that's what you're going to hear today to complete this podcast. As always, before I do so, I want to remind you that I've got literally boxes of doubles of 78s that need good homes, and I sell them much more cheaply than the dealers do, particularly if you like opera. I've got lots of Caruso's and great singers like that. The other thing is, please tell your friends about this podcast, particularly at the moment when people are stuck in the house. They may find this podcast entertaining. It's certainly different from other podcasts because, as you know, everything apart from my own track was recorded before 1960 in the era of 78s. This time I didn't have a cylinder, but that might appear too. That's even earlier. So please tell your friends to contact me directly. It's spats47@ntlworld.com. That's SPATS 47 at ntlworld.com. And of course, just tell people to do a web search for Earl Oakin's Gramophone Show and it'll come straight up. Well, that's enough of me chatting. Here is the track, and until next time, when let's hope we won't still be prisoners in our own homes, I say au revoir. When I do too much flying, I arrive, but think I'm dying. I'm in Rio, but I'm feeling really ill. There's an awful lot of coughing in Brazil. I buy myself feijoada, can I eat it? I eat nada, though around me all the people eat their fill. There's an awful lot of coughing in Brazil. I know I should go to bed. I cough and sneeze till I'm nearly dead. My friends try to feed me pinga. That's a no, no, no. My throat is sore and sticky, and it makes me feel quite sicky. I just wish I had a great big magic pill. There's an awful lot of coughing in Brazil. I'm here in a shanty town. Can't eat, I can't keep it down. My friends try to feed me pinga. I say no, no, no. My throat is sore and sticky, and it makes me feel quite sicky. I just wish I had a great big magic pill. There's an awful lot of coughing, an awful lot of coughing, an awful lot of in Brazil.